Welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, episode number 68. Welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the USA Firearm Training Network, and I am your host, Riley Bowman.
Riley, the guy who has more guns than most people have underwear. And I'm Jacob Paulson.
Jacob's the guy who has or buys more books than he can read.
Yes, my wife has made rules recently. I'm not allowed to buy more books till I've read the ones I have.
That sounds actually like a good rule. Should I apply the same logic to my buying of guns? Like,
no.
As far as, you know, I'm only allowed to buy the guns that I actually use? I think not.
Yeah, bad idea.
So, welcome everybody to the show today of the Concealed Carry Podcast. Today's topic is battle scars. What the election means going forward. But first, this day in history, 1989. This is a good time, man. I remember this very vividly for whatever reason. I remember sitting at the TV and watching this happen.
Dude, you were six.
And now you just gave away how old I am. Come on, man.
That's acceptable.
I just lost like credibility. No, anyway. So
you'd lose credibility if you were 25.
Yes, I am 33 years old, everybody. Congratulations. So I was 6 years old. I was sitting at the TV, and I remember watching this happen. East Germany opens the Berlin Wall. Kind of a big deal, right?
Yeah.
Like I said, for whatever reason, this really stands out vividly in my mind. I remember watching the crowds, the hordes of people, all the pent up frustration and anger and also excitement as they knew that they were finally bringing down and tearing down this wall that had stood between them and freedom for 50 years, really, pretty darn near. So this was just a remarkable time in history. Do you remember this at all, Jacob, for you personally?
No memory of it really at all.
Oh. Yeah, actually, we're the same age.
I was going to say, I was six as well, but apparently not as in tune with the world happenings.
I don't know why. I just know. Well, I think my dad, you know, he, if anybody has inspired me to like stay up with current events, it's my father, because like stuff like this would happen and like the TV would, you know, he'd always have the TV on watching, you know, world events if there was something big going on, or the newspaper on his lap, you know, reading the news and things like that. And that's definitely carried over with me. I'm always reading the news. But so, you know, there you go. This day in history, 1989, today being November 9th, by the way, of 1989, East Germany opening up the Berlin Wall. And I remember the other thing I kind of remember is, and probably just because I remember seeing the clips of it after this was said, but I remember President Reagan saying, you know, Mr. Gorbachev, you know, tear down this wall. And just a fascinating time in history for me and for freedom. Speaking of another fascinating time in history, on this day in 2016.
Yeah, that's right.
Donald Trump, elected president of the United States.
Yeah.
Literally, I like actually was on this day. It was this morning at like 2 a.m. when it was announced that Hillary Clinton, I think that was actually about 2 a.m. Eastern time. So it was pretty close to midnight or a little after midnight here in Mountain, you know, our time zone. But Hillary Clinton called and conceded the presidency to Donald Trump. And so a fascinating time in history. I mean, we saw a presidential campaign not like anything we've ever seen before, as far as just the craziness and the it was just back and forth, shots at each other. All the attacks on Clinton and, of course, all of her attacks on Trump and back and forth and back and forth. And that's why I titled today's episode Battle Scars, because really what we have right now is quite a few scars across the landscape of America. It's time to heal and it's time to move forward and hopefully move forward in a positive direction. Don't you think, Jacob?
Yep. Yeah, I'm looking forward to moving forward.
Yeah.
Wow, that sounded weird.
That was great. So, by the way, today's episode is brought to you by Guardian Nation. We'll get into that with a special announcement towards the end of the episode, so I hope that you'll stick around and stay tuned for that. So why don't we talk about it, Jacob? Battle scars, what the election means going forward. And you just said you're looking forward to going forward, as am I. But let's just break it down real quick. Trump wins the presidency. What does this mean for us going forward? What do you think? What's your initial takeaway?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary to talk about why he won, but there definitely are some implications about it. I think that generally speaking, you know, you're looking right now at a situation where the Republican Party now controls the White House, the Senate, and the House of Representatives, right? So both houses of Congress and the White House, and here shortly is going to be able to place the 9th Supreme Court justice, which really will create a conservative sway in the Supreme Court. So that's a lot of impressive power for one political party to have all at once. And it's been, I don't know how long it's been, probably, I don't know, at least a decade, maybe two, since one party controlled all of that. And so I think the biggest thing that we could expect looking forward is having one party having that much control, we're going to see some things actually happen. Now, the question is going to be, will the power be abused? Will the Republican Party look at this and say, okay, we can virtually do anything we want within reason, you know, as long as our party members, representatives, and senators would call it reasonable, we could push through darn near anything? Or are they inclined to say, we don't want the backlash that would come from us doing whatever the heck we want, so we need to be careful and approach this with caution?
Yeah, I agree. You know, you're correct in that. That's the other big news from this, from last night, is that yes, the House did retain control as far as Republicans go. Yes, the Senate is going to remain in the Republicans' hands. Does that mean that it really is as much control as what we think? You know, actually, I'm going to contradict a little bit there and say no, because as many people, you know, probably are somewhat aware that due to, you know, rules in the Senate, you know, traditionally, like, you don't pass bills through the Senate just because you have 51 votes for them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can, but a lot of times what happens is you get enough, you know, of the Democrats that essentially filibuster. You know, they hold out and they force you to get past a 60 vote margin or point before you can really get some of your laws through passed through the Senate. The House is, you know, a different matter. It's solidly within control of the Republicans. You know, is this a unique time, though, as far as presidential power? It is. You know, I mean, the last time I recall there being this sort of situation was in the early days of President W. Bush, his term, and before that, Clinton, Bill Clinton, early on in his presidency, you know, pretty much from 92 up to about 94, you know, he had basically full control of, you know, or at least the Democrats had control of the White House and the Senate and the House, which kind of led to that big push in 96 where things kind of switched. So it is a big deal, and it is I have to say, as far as gun rights go, it is a huge, huge win. And that is obviously what, you know, we find, you know, such a good outcome of all this. Although I must say, too, and I got to admit, Jacob, I am not yet entirely convinced that Donald Trump is the conservative that I think a lot of people think that he is. He's talked some good talk, and he's, you know, walked some good walk on the campaign trail as far as some of the conservative policies are concerned. But it would not surprise me at all in the least if something, you know, major happens. Let's just say we, you know, and heaven forbid it, you know, we have another mass, shooting that takes place. And the country is in an uproar, and there's pressure, there's a public outcry, and does Trump cave in a little bit and concede a little bit on some of the Second Amendment things? I don't know. I think the jury for me is out a little bit still, but we'll see. It's looking up as far as Second Amendment rights are concerned. In the biggest area that you touched on, Jacob, that it is looking up in is you're right, the Supreme Court. That's a big, 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 big deal. If Clinton had won, or if Obama had the opportunity to, put in that ninth justice, that would have been more liberal leaning as far as the Constitution's concerned, then that could have really changed the face of the Second Amendment here in America.
Yeah. 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 Now here's what I will say is that, also just quickly to clarify, due process hasn't changed. Like, our Constitution hasn't changed. It takes the same amount of work and effort to get laws passed as it did before. I've seen comments on our own Facebook page, emails from our own readers and listeners of this podcast to the effect of things like, yeah, but when Trump's elected, we're going to have national reciprocity. And somehow, let's remember that things haven't, like, Trump is not magical and the president is not magical. In the same way that Obama failed to do a lot of gun control related things, Trump could potentially fail to do a lot of the pro-gun things. So the processes haven't changed. It still takes the same, things to have happen in order to get laws changed and et cetera. And the president still has only so much control, independent of Congress, over gun related legislation and things.
Yeah, and that was kind of my point. There is only so much that you can do, even when you have the type of control that the Republicans have right now. Speaking to national reciprocity, I know that some things that are on some people's minds that they would like to see passed as laws in the near future, things like national concealed carry reciprocity, things like ending gun-free zones on military bases, reforming the background check system and processes, legalizing suppressors and or silencers, things of that nature. Oh, and this is a big one because this was really an issue under President Obama, where he had policies put in place that really limited the ability to import collectible historical firearms. And that's something too. I know some people have, in their sights as far as liking to see these types of laws and things passed. Will all that happen? No. Unfortunately, the reality is I don't believe all of that, that wish list, if you will, of laws, Second Amendment supporting laws, it's not all going to happen. I think the big one on a lot of people's minds is the national reciprocity thing, but I'm not entirely convinced that even if that were to really move forward towards law, now, don't get me wrong, I would love to have national reciprocity. I mean, it would rock my world. But I'm not convinced that it'll happen. And even if it does, I am convinced that you will have states that will sue the federal government over it. States like New York, California, Illinois, that will, be in an uproar over a law like that forces these states to accept concealed carry, where that is not something that they're, they're not open to that. I mean, I know there's concealed carry now in Illinois more so than like there is in New York and California, but Illinois is still very restrictive as far as other states' residents that are able to come in and carry concealed. So you see, I'm pretty convinced that there would be a number of states that would sue the federal government over passing a law like that.
Or it might come at great cost. I mean, a question might be asked, like, is it worth it to us? And you, our listeners, would you concede to have a very high training requirement in order to get national reciprocity?
And that's the other thing.
It could come at a cost. What would we have to put in that legislation in order to get the votes necessary to get it to pass? It might be more expensive than we're willing to pay.
Yeah. That's the other thing. Exactly. You know, yeah. So maybe we get national reciprocity, but you got to do, you know, a full day or two full days of training to get that permit. And, that's way different than, you know, that's, that would be a lot more of a burden on people, money wise, you know, to pay for that kind of training. And, you know, not that the training would be a bad thing, but, you know, if you, I think it was what, episode 50, Jacob, or thereabouts, where we really hashed out the whole, you know, should the federal government require, or should the government in general require training and things like that? And so you can go check.
Yeah, episode 50.
Yeah. So you can go back and check that out and listen to our thoughts on that. I mean, it's training is always a good thing, but if you got the federal government kind of meddling and getting into things, I am less inclined to appreciate that. Even if it does mean national reciprocity, I'm definitely wary giving the federal government more power in really anything. So,
yeah, absolutely.
So let's move along on that. I mean, that's just some things to think about and some things that are on some people's minds. But I think the huge one here, though, really is the Supreme Court. And I really hope that Donald Trump, you know, stays true to, you know, he kind of released a list of potential people that he would consider. And, you know, on there was people like actually, you know, Ted Cruz, former, you know, primary candidate, you know, and stuff. Mike Lee out of Utah, you know, I mean, these are two guys that have very conservative beliefs on the Constitution and certainly are very, very proud and staunch Second Amendment supporters. I mean, that would be, you know, either one of those guys. And then there's a number of other people on this list that would be a real boon to the court as far as protecting some core fundamental pieces of the Constitution and the Second Amendment. And that's huge.
Yep. We'll see how that flies.
Absolutely. So exciting things still yet to come. But speaking of battle scars, I titled the episode this because not just because of the scars that our nation has after this ruthless election cycle we've just been through, but there are some other things that happened yesterday that maybe are not on all of you listeners' radar. And some of these we have talked about in the podcast in the past, you know, some of our news episodes and things. You know, there were definitely some things yesterday that didn't go in our favor as far as Second Amendment rights are concerned. And that would be referring to ballot initiatives that were passed in a number of states, specifically Washington, California, and Nevada. So why don't we kind of go through those real quick, Jacob, so people, you know what those are and what some of the specifics are and details in those, because there's mm-hmm. definitely some things there that are really concerning. And keep in mind, these did pass. So these are going to become law. They're going to go into effect, and they have substantial impacts on gun owners in these respective states. So why don't we start with Washington?
Yep. So Washington is wow, so extreme. So this is ballot initiative 1491. This passed with a 71.17% vote. That's 1.4 million yes votes to 571,000 no votes. And essentially the idea here is, okay, we already have this idea of an extreme risk protection order, which is this idea that if somebody feels that another individual is an immediate, you know, that person has immediate potential to be violent, right? That they are very soon likely to become violent, then we can, issue a what's the word they use in the thing? A petition to a court for an extreme risk protection order. And this extreme risk protection order, if issued, would be delivered and executed by a law enforcement officer, and it would allow that law enforcement could immediately remove firearms from that individual, and that individual would not be able to obtain new firearms while the protection order is in effect. But that's just the top tip of the iceberg here.
Yeah. Now, this ballot initiative, sponsored by and funded by the Washington Alliance for Gun Responsibility, which, of course, has ties to Mayor Bloomberg's Everytown organization and so forth. You know, I always chuckle at the names that, you know, people come up with for their lobbying organizations, you know, the Washington Alliance for Gun Responsibility. But when you really dig into the nitty-gritty, you know, the details of this law, it is far from what I would call or consider responsible legislation. And I know, Jacob, you did some digging on this. And what did you discover? I mean, so who is able – what is the process, I guess, for obtaining an extreme risk protection order? I mean, you kind of touched on it very lightly, but can you give us a little bit more of the specifics?
Yep. So essentially, these protection orders can be requested by a member of the person of interest's family or household, or a person in a dating relationship with that individual, or law enforcement personnel. And bear in mind that the law enforcement personnel piece is really scary, because that means that really anyone could approach law enforcement and say, "Oh, that Jacob Paulson dude's freaking scary," and then the law enforcement officer acting on that evidence or that statement could then go and issue or petition for the extreme risk protection order. So darn near, I mean, indirectly, anyone could do it. But, you know, because the law enforcement officer could do it. And that person just has to, fill out a petition, and it has to be accompanied by a statement made under oath. And that statement must explain specifically why there's a reasonable fear of future dangerous acts by that individual. And then the law enforcement officer serves it. Now the extreme protection order has to be seen, heard, and presented in a superior court within the state of Washington. They have to have a hearing on this, and both parties attend the hearing. And if it's issued, if the court decides to issue it, then it stands for 12 months. And now the person of interest can request to have it repealed. And there's a variety of appeal process related kinds of things. But once it's been issued by that court, the law enforcement shows up and takes the guns. And if they are unable, the court can issue a warrant to compel the surrender of those items. So it's pretty extreme. Yeah. Now, all of that may sound scary, but here's the real key. In addition to the standard extreme risk protection order, they've also created a second type of order called the ex parte extreme risk protection order. Ex parte, I don't know how to say it in English, but in Spanish it would be ex parte.
Well, I believe it would actually be Latin.
Whatever it is. When I see it, I see Spanish, so I can't.
I totally caught that when you pronounced it the first time. I'm like, oh, that's funny. That's Spanish coming through.
Probably the Latin is similar. Anyway.
Ex parte is fine.
You'll have to run with that. So this is worse, because the standard extreme risk protection order requires a superior court at which both parties have to attend the hearing. But the ex parte order does not require that the person of interest, what they call the respondent, does not require that the respondent attend the hearing.
Yeah.
And it can be issued by a lower court. Mm-hmm. Okay. A municipal court, district court, or superior court. And so imagine that someone shows up, law enforcement officer or friend or household member or someone in a dating relationship, and says, "All right, Jacob Paulson, he's a dangerous dude. I'll issue a statement under oath." And then the court in which it's filed could be a city court, could be a municipal court. They have to have a hearing that day or the court's next business day to review the evidence from the statement. And if they choose to issue that ex parte extreme risk protection order, then it stands, for a period of like 2 weeks or something like that, until the superior court can hold the standard hearing to issue the standard extreme risk protection order. So I mean, talk about a lack of due process, where you can't even speak on your own behalf before your constitutional rights are stripped from you.
Yeah, I mean, this amounts to, for some individuals that this is going to be applied to, it amounts to gun confiscation. And as you suggested, without due process. That is a big flipping deal. Don't get me wrong. I am not an advocate of domestic violence, or, and it pains me when spouses, are killed by their spouse, in situations, like where these sort of things occur within. But this is so extreme as far as to, without due process, completely surrender a major provision in your Bill of Rights. That's wow. I foresee And keep in mind, by this passing, by the voters themselves voting for and passing this into law, it actually goes into, my understanding on this, as is true with many states with ballot initiatives, it basically goes into constitution, you know. So for that state, that this basically, to me, the way I read it, is in direct violation of our federal constitution. I foresee a lawsuit in the future on this. I mean, I just don't see how it doesn't result in that. And the good news is, you know, we are likely to have a conservative leaning Supreme Court, you know, that if this gets to that point, it will decide on it. So good explanation, Jacob. I think you really laid it on the line so people can really understand how this law works and the dangers that, you know, potential dangers that lie therein for gun owners in Washington. I mean, just to sum it up, this is as simple as, you know, you're going through a divorce proceeding and your spouse, you know, knowing that you've got guns. I mean, even if there's absolutely no history, you know, with you having, you know, violence or treating your spouse, you know, violently or roughly or saying threatening things or anything like that. Even if there's zero history, just because a spouse wants to, you know, get back at her husband or whatever, you know, she just got to go and file one of these petitions and bam, you know, like it's really ugly. There needs to be due process for a reason. And this completely, you know, there's a risk that you completely take away due process in this situation. So, like I said, not what I would consider to be responsible law, but whatever. Let's move now to California. Jacob was explaining to me, you did some digging on this one as well. And I'll admit, I was really shocked. I mean, even for California, at how wide of a margin there was on passing this ballot initiative. It passed by 62-37%. That's a pretty wide gap, I would say, even for California. I mean, because keep in mind that we've got Northern California, the eastern parts of California, the more rural parts of California, which it's a big state, and there are a lot of rural counties, a lot of conservative counties still yet in California. Just happens to be that there's a huge you know, part of the coastal part of the state that, you know, leans very much, you know, towards gun control and pro gun control policies. But so the issue here was California's Proposition 63, which did a number of things. It put into law background checks for ammunition purchases and large capacity ammunition magazines and a ban. So, I mean, not only, if I read this correctly, Jacob, it will require a background check for you to purchase ammunition. And I'll let you go into some of the details on that. But if I read it correctly, did I read somewhere that you'll have to get a background check to buy even just simple magazines? Or was it only referring to, because I know the law deals with banning large capacity magazines, which is greater than 10 rounds. And the big issue there, and this is a big one, Californians, is that, you know, yes, California has had a 10-round magazine limit for some time, but if you owned greater than 10 round magazines, you know, that you had prior to 2000, the year 2000, you could still have them, right? Mm-hmm. And now that goes away. There's not even a grandfather clause at all.
Yep.
Right?
So the answer to your question is no, you that's not true. So the law, the only thing that changes as far as background checks is that an individual has to pass a background check once every 4 years to obtain a permit that allows them to buy ammunition. And anyone who sells ammunition, the vendor has to check that permit before they can sell the individual ammo. So I have to go get a permit that allows me to buy ammo. That permit requires a background check, and that permit's good for 4 years. And so that's gotcha. The only thing that's wrapped up in a background check. But
one of the stories I read, and I think it was on the NRA site even, was a little bit confusing than how it was worded. But anyway, continue.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's been a lot of confusion, frankly. That now, also related to ammo, just to kind of wrap up the ammo part of this, they also have clarified what's required in order to sell ammo. So in the package of gun laws that were passed earlier this year, which, oh my gosh, talk about ridiculousness. In that package of laws, they set up some legislation that essentially required that if you're in the business of selling ammo, you also have to require a specific license to sell ammo, which is not, you know, not true federally, right? I mean, you and I can be in the business, in fact, we are in the business of selling ammo, and that requires no license. But in California now it does. And this new, you know, part of this new initiative that was passed this morning, yesterday, it now kind of clarified, well, how much ammo does a person have to be selling in order to be considered in the business so that they have to obtain this California Department of Justice license to sell ammo? And as I understand it, and I've been trying to get some clarity, but it looks like the number is 50 a month. If you sell more than 50 rounds of ammo a month, you now are in the business and you need to go get a license. So that's pretty restrictive. And to your point, what I took from this, the only real magazine capacity thing I could understand from this latest ballot is that now these large capacity magazines that previously were grandfathered in prior to the year 2000 now are, you know, illegal to possess at all, and it requires their disposal.
that's interesting what you just said right there. I mean, disposal, like, so I didn't see any specifics in the law on that. It just, you know.
Yeah, it is in there. It does specify how it has to be disposed. Okay. I don't think it's worthy of our time to get into it. But yeah, it does, as specified, it has to, you know, they do have to be disposed of.
Gotcha.
So super, super fun on that one.
Yeah, so like you said, I mean, even for those of you that had grandfathered magazines, you've got to now just surrender them. And, you know, that ship has sailed. Nothing greater than 10 rounds in California. No more allowances on, carbine-style rifles. This was some of the things that were passed earlier this year as far as, you know, no more bullet button. And even if you could have a bullet button with a 30-round mag, you know, that's locked into the gun, now that 30-round mag is outlawed. I mean, they've completely covered their bases on this as far as, it, like I said, that ship has sailed. No more than 10 round magazines is now the law of the land in California. And that's pretty disappointing. But the real shocker really is the background checks required for ammunition purchases. Is there anywhere else in the U.S. that requires that, Jacob?
Well, that's a really good question. Not that I know of. I mean, we could name municipalities where that wouldn't shock us. But I don't know of any others. I just did a quick search and I'm not seeing any quickly that appear to also have that kind of initiative. You know, also part of that also with the ammo is, you know, back in the July 2016 legislation that was passed, it became illegal to import ammo. Essentially, a person couldn't cross the border into Las Vegas, for example, buy some ammo and then drive it back to California. And this latest Proposition 63 that passed yesterday moved the start date of that up from July 2019 to January 2018. So now if you buy any out-of-state ammo, similar to a gun, it has to be sent to a dealer in California, and you have to pick it up at the dealer, obviously, where they'll make sure you have the permit to buy ammo.
Wow. Well, I think it's quite apparent for us then, Jacob. You know, as some of our listeners, I'm sure, are aware, we sell ammunition through our site. We are no longer shipping ammunition to California, though, are we?
Not anymore. I mean, it was already problematic, frankly. But yeah, we're definitely not. We just can't ship ammo to California anymore. We'd have to ship it to a dealer, which, frankly, for us as a business, is a significant challenge logistically. And so we're going to have to prohibit Californians from buying with a California shipping address.
Yeah. Yeah. There's all this talk I've seen on social media and whatnot, you know, about a California Brexit, you know, like, is California going to break away from the rest of the U.S.? And not on this issue, but because of them basically rejecting the fact that Donald Trump is going to be the president and so forth. Anyway, I could think of all sorts of humorous things I could say in relation to that. But California is becoming a very difficult place for me to want to spend any sort of, you know, time in.
Well, they threw their 55 electoral votes into the hat You know, they have more power in the Electoral College than any other state in the country. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just didn't work out for them this time.
No, not at all. Oh, anyway, I'm really sorry to those of you Californians, you know, that listen to our podcast. And I know we have quite a few of you because we see the downloads that are attributed to California, and there's quite a few of you. And so I know you're listening, and I just got to say, like, my heart goes out to you. And I really sincerely and genuinely wish and hope that you can find some sort of way of getting back to just good old common sense, because what's been happening there this year in particular with the Second Amendment issues, and of course I know there's other problems besides that, but it just is not what I would deem as being common sense at all.
Well, I'm going to talk about that at the end, after we talk about Nevada and Maine. I have some words to say about how we move forward, sure, in terms of making gun rights a bigger thing in this, yep, country.
Okay, so let's go to Nevada now. And it's actually interesting because you used driving into Las Vegas to buy ammunition as an example. Nevada is such an interesting state. There's such a dichotomy, like, within Nevada between, and I know this because I lived there for about half a year, 6 months, a number of years ago, and got, you know, somewhat familiar with the culture and with politics there and so forth. And, you know, I know there are so many freedom-loving people in Nevada, but, you know, they are completely dominated, like so many, like California, that's a great example. Like even here in Colorado, where Denver dominates politics for the rest of the state. It's true everywhere. But, you know, you got Las Vegas that just really, and Clark County that just dominates things there. And so Nevada had a question on the ballot as well. It was labeled question one. And this probably doesn't come as a big surprise necessarily, but I know there's Nevada gun owners that are not happy about it. And question one was a universal background check law. And that one, the thing that was interesting though to me was that this one barely passed. I mean, barely. It was less than 10,000 votes difference. You know, it was basically 50, it was almost 50% to 50%, but the difference was like right there, about 10,000 votes in the yes category for this universal background check requirement. So similar to what we have now in Colorado, similar to, you know, a number, I think there's probably what, about 8 or 9 states now, maybe 10, that have a so-called universal background check, law in place. And so now even for private party sales, you've got to have a dealer facilitate those sales for you. And it really just doesn't solve the issues that the supporters of these types of laws claim that they will solve. Now, just to be clear, there is an exemption similar to like what we have here in Colorado that transfers between family members are exempted. I'm not exactly sure the specifics on what they consider as family members, but there is an exemption there. And also says there's an exemption for temporary transfers for hunting or sport shooting. So you could, I guess, lend a firearm to someone if they're going to go, you know, sport shooting, you know, just they're going to go shoot for fun or hunt. And we don't actually technically even have that exemption here in Colorado, interestingly enough. But so this is now the law of the land in Nevada, though, a universal background check.
Yeah, and actually more states than you think, Riley. I think there's 18 states now.
Is there really that many now?
Yeah. So,
whoa.
So welcome Nevada to the club. I'm sorry that you're part of the club, and that's just the way it is. You know, this. I'm gonna hold back from going all crazy soapbox on everybody here because I think I went all lunatic on this very thing on a podcast episode 2 or 3 episodes ago when we were talking about this coming up on the ballot for Nevada and Maine, and I just went nuts because this one is one of those that really upsets me and frustrates me. And I guarantee you, in the next 3 to 5 years, you'll see an initiative in these 18 states, including Nevada, to create a gun registry, because it'll be it's only a matter of time before we figure out that none of these laws are enforceable unless we have a record of who owns what guns.
Yep.
And so it's an inevitable end here to where this has to go. And it's really upsetting. Now, what I found very interesting, though, is that while this measure passed in Nevada, the similar or comparable measure in Maine was defeated.
Yeah. Yeah, and that probably actually, I would suspect, surprises some people. But Maine is an interesting state. So that was the one good news as far as a lot of these gun control-related ballot initiatives that were taking place in a number of states across the country. That was the one, win on the issue of gun control. And the issue in Maine was the same issue that was decided in Nevada. It was basically a universal background check requirement. So that was defeated. And actually, a lot more decisively than how the one was decided in Nevada. I believe that one was 52% opposing the measure and 48% were in favor. So quite a bit wider divide on that for the residents of Maine. So we're happy to see that. And that's the good news, other than, what we started with talking about the presidential race and what that means most likely, in a positive light for Second Amendment rights. But, on the state-to-state issues, Maine is the one, kind of glimmer of hope, I guess.
Yep. Which I think leads me to the most two important things I could impart on listeners of the podcast talking about battle scars in the election and moving forward. The first one is this: like, I'm a raving fan of the elections and federal power and Congress and president and judicial system. But all that said, like, if you haven't figured out by now, like, the gun control battle is not taking place at the national level. It's really not. It takes place at the state level, and it has for decades. Not to say it couldn't get ugly up there in Congress or at the White House, and not to say that there's not danger there or opportunity there. I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying is that the real battle, the trenches, the day-to-day is at the state level, because that's where the gun grabbers are really figuring out that they can execute a lot of influence and power. That's where the money is being spent. That's where the advertising is running. That's where the real battle is taking place for gun control in this country. I mean, think about this. 18 states now with universal background checks. Like, how long is it going to be before there's 28 states? And then when there's 28 states, how hard is it going to be to get the federal legislation done then?
Yeah.
It's about just getting a little at a time, a little bit of ground at a time, and getting further and further and further, and our rights just slowly slip. And so I can't emphasize enough how, yeah, we had a win, at the White House or whatever, but, for gun rights. But that said, we lost the battle in three other states for a gun control or gun rights related issue. And so, one step forward, three step back, as far as I'm concerned. And if you look at the last decade or so, we've had a lot of wins at the state level, but we've had a lot of losses. And we've seen some of those here in our home state, Riley and I have.
Yep.
So just don't forget that the battle really is taking place at the local level, because it's easier for the gun grabbers to get the legislation pushed there. And they're very strategic. They're picking the right places. They know where to go. And this will segue me into my second point, but I better take a breath and see, Riley, if you have anything to add.
Well, what I'll add is that I completely agree with you. And that is the point, really, of our episode here today, is to remind everybody, because I think what's happening today, right now, as we speak, is for a lot of us Second Amendment supporters across the country, we're like, oh, Donald Trump got elected. The House, the Senate is in, okay hands. So, everybody, big sigh of relief, right? And that's not the point. The point is we are still very much in an active battle for our rights from state to state to state to state. The thing I thought was really interesting about these three states' initiatives that passed that move closer to gun control is that if you look at national polling on the issue of gun control, it is one of the widest gaps that we've seen in a long time as far as those that oppose gun, more gun control, more restrictive gun control nationwide, compared to those that, favor it. And but that's a the reason I mentioned that is while on a national scale, that type of poll, that's not taking into account what the demographics look like from state to state to state. And it's similar even in the presidential race. I mean, presidential races are not won on a popular vote. They are won through a republic style vote. And republic means like the essence of a republic in the U.S., which is that that's what we are. I cringe, and maybe you don't know this about me, or maybe you do. I cringe, Jacob, when I hear somebody refer to us as being a democracy. I absolutely and utterly cringe because our government is not a democracy. We are not, governed and ruled by a majority vote. We select our nation's leader, which is a big deal, based on from state to state to state, what each individual state determines, that they, you don't give the control entirely to just what the popular vote says. So even though, and that's it's interesting and very applicable right now because Hillary Clinton, it's looking like she's won the popular vote, but she didn't win the election and not even close. Trump, I think is securing about 300 or pretty close to 300 of the Electoral College votes, which is a pretty wide gap over Clinton. But that's the nature of a republic. We have a majority of states right now that have leaned conservatively, on this issue. And so the same is true on these gun control things. I mean, you could look at this poll on a national basis that says people don't favor gun control, but don't forget that places like California, New York, Illinois, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, I think was in the news recently too, but New Jersey, don't forget that these are states that are losing the battles on Second Amendment rights. And there are others as well. And so, we can't look at this, election that took place yesterday and go, whew, thank goodness that's over. We don't have to worry for 4 years on gun control issues. No, far from it. We might not have to worry about anything on a national basis as much, but by golly, in our individual and home states, we've got to be even more vigilant than ever before, I would say.
Yes. Yeah, great. I'm glad you talked about the Republic thing and how that kind of echoes or reflects here in this. And here'd be where I'd go next. And this is my second major imparting thought. And maybe it's not revolutionary. Maybe we all already know this, but maybe it's a good reminder. We suck at marketing. Like the gun rights organization, group, community, we suck at it. Like we are awful. Like think how good the opponents have been in this war. Every town for gun safety. Think about the verbiage, things like gun responsibility, smart gun laws, common sense gun laws. They use the right words that make it sound good. Even the way they talk about it. Think about the Nevada ballot. I mean, there's a lot of gun owners in Nevada. I mean, this is not like, a liberal state where we just lost a fight. No, like gun owners voted yes because of the way it was packaged. Why, if you're a good gun owner, why do you have a problem with the background check? Shouldn't that be a good thing? Is it such a bad thing that we want to, keep prohibited people from getting guns? Like they are so good at selling this crap. They're so good at it. In Washington, there's probably some lady who was killed by her husband and they have like this one news story that happened 4 years ago and they're just clinging on to it for dear life. And if we could just save one more of these poor domesticated, violent people, whatever, like they sell it. On the gun rights side, if we want to win this war over the next decade, we have got to figure out our marketing. Like we can no longer go out and be like, yeah, but we like our guns.
Yeah.
Or from my cold dead fingers. Like that's not winning us a lot of these fights. Like I gotta tell you, or like the Second Amendment is my permit, or I'm a fan. Like I believe all that. I'm not saying that I'm not with you guys or gals. I'm saying that we have got to learn to repackage the stuff. Like, yeah. We've got to figure out how to say it. And we've, you know, I would love to form, like, maybe we need to create a nonprofit that's like every town for ending, you know, gun violence, and finally, like, have some name that sounds like we're gun grabbers, but we're not, because there are actually good ideas out there to end this violence and to pass good legislation that has nothing to do with taking guns away or limiting rights from people who are law-abiding citizens. So let's figure out, like, I'm not saying I have the answer. I'm simply saying that if you're listening to this, hopefully you understand that we've got to change our tone, that we have got to figure out how to package this in a way that's swallowable, that's tangible, that people don't look at us like we're a bunch of crazy, wacko, you know, Rambo-loving people.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying, you know, because I think what you see in this very, you know, issue, Jacob, as far as the way that the... And I know we try to stay away, you know, in this podcast from, you know, specifically speaking, you know, about or comparing Democrats and Republicans, but I'm going to use a comparison right now, because the one thing I see that has made Democrats very successful in elections and in election cycles is that as a party, they do a very good job of, you know, once they pick a candidate, for instance, of unifying around and supporting that candidate and getting everybody on that train, you know, everybody gets all in a line and okay, great, we're going to get Clinton elected, okay? And Republicans don't do that nearly as well, really not well at all. And that's one thing that has led us, you know, I say us, I mean, yes, I am a Republican, I'll admit it, okay? But we do try to be very objective in our approach in this podcast. But the Republicans tend to fracture a lot more on issues and on candidates, and especially they did on the whole issue of selecting Trump as the nominee, right? My point is that what you're saying, Jacob, I feel is very similar, that the gun grabbers are very good about basically getting on board and being completely unified in how they tackle the issue, in the verbiage that they use, in the way they communicate about it, and so they tend to be very successful in that regard. Whereas on our side, on the pro gun side, you have people that are probably more like us that are that try to approach issues very thoughtfully and hopefully, you know, intelligently. If we have a debate, we try to be very much focused on the issues and speak, you know, to the issues intelligently, as opposed to, you know, delving into personal attacks and so forth and not really, you know, hitting the issues with substance. But we have other people on the pro-gun side that, I'm sorry, you know, don't do the rest of us a lot of justice. It's like the guy carrying his rifle openly and wanders onto that campus in San Antonio, Texas the other day. You know, like, what the crap? That just makes all the rest of us look like a bunch of crazies. And that is not the right approach, because we will lose the battle if the, you know, middle of America looks at pro-gun people, and it will happen eventually if we're not careful, to look at us as being a bunch of crazies. And we will lose the battle. So
yeah, the war.
Yeah, the war, you're right. And so we've got, like you said, I really like what you said, and I have sometimes thought too, you know, about, you know, like, I mean, I know the NRA tries to do a lot, and they do a lot. Is it done through the NRA? I don't know. Or do we, you know, there's already a number of gun organizations out there. I'm not sure what the answer is. I'm not sure what the message is. You admitted that as much, you know, Jacob, yourself, because it's not an easy answer to decide how do we do this? How do we unify on a vision, on a message, on a media campaign, you know, for pro-gun, you know, type stuff? It's not an easy answer, but I think it's good that we're talking about it and hopefully putting that in people's minds, and hopefully, you know, we start to see some solutions. I'm going to be continuing to think on this, and I know you will be too. So certainly, folks, if you've got any thoughts or ideas or suggestions, and I mean like real thoughts and suggestions, I don't I don't want to hear it if you send me an email and say, you know, something ridiculous like, you know, we should all walk around caring openly. That'll communicate, you know, the message the best way. You know, that'll help people know that this is, you know, this is an acceptable thing. I'm not so sure that's the right approach. Like, to me, I'm sorry. I think that's kind of crazy. People will just look at that and go, that's crazy. Although there is something to be said that once upon a time in America, carrying a gun openly on your hip was definitely the accepted thing to do. And we've gotten away from that. And certainly removing guns from our lives has, you know, that's why we are where we are today as far as, you know, people that are completely clueless about them. But
sure,
anyway.
Sure. But that's not the low-hanging fruit. Yeah, and that's the point, is our adversaries have figured out how to hit us where we're weakest and go after the low-hanging fruit and then make that turn into something bigger and slowly gain traction. And we've got to figure out how to do it the same way.
Yep. So, I mean, yeah, we're in agreement on that. And so, like I said, if you have genuine ideas and solutions about communicating our message and trying to win these battles state by state by state and the public, you know, public opinion on the whole, by all means, I'm open ears. So any last thoughts, Jacob, on the, you know, the election or anything like that, anything we've discussed today?
No, I would just remind people that as an organization, we're still focused on firearm training.
Yep.
We care about policy, not politics, and policy, not politicians. You know, all that aside, we hope that this was valuable.
Yeah. Yep. Same here. So let's begin to wrap it up. Today's episode is brought to you by our latest product, Guardian Nation. Guardian Nation is our community of guardians and sheepdogs who are committed to protecting the innocent from the threats that surround us. Officially recently launched, members of this community receive our quarterly box of Guardian gear, monthly training, shooter skills and drills, access to our Guardian Nation live monthly webinars with top industry professionals, and so much, much, much more. Plus, this month on Guardian Nation, I'd like to officially announce this. We had some discussion about it the other day, and this is stinking awesome. I am totally stoked about this. This month, we are going to have special Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals. And when we say deals, Jacob, we mean like screaming deals. But
yeah, our competitors are going to be really angry.
I don't know if you want to give any examples or if you want to give generalities, but when I say crazy deals, deals. It blow your
mind. We'll have products that are 40 to 80% off that are legit high, like, you know, well-known products. It's going to be nuts.
80% off. There's almost nothing out there on Black Friday that you'll find that is legit. You know, actually 80% off. So stay tuned for that. And to get access to our special, our big, big, big sales, our Black Friday and Cyber Monday sales, you're going to want to be a member of Guardian Nation. So super excited for that. I almost wish I could participate and get my hands on some of the things we're going to offer at the crazy discounts we're going to offer them for. I can't, Jacob, you won't even allow me to buy some of those things for the price we're going to be giving them for. You'll let me buy it at cost, right? But we're going to be doing some of these things for below cost.
Yeah. Our own employees are kind of frustrated. They're like, well, can I get them with those deals? Sorry, team.
So anyway, there you go. On to picks of the week. Jacob, what's your pick this week?
Epic Bars. So if people aren't familiar with it, I'm holding one right now in my hand. So Epic Bar is I don't want to call it jerky. I don't think they'd probably like me very much if I said jerky, but it's a meat bar. It's kind of in this saran wrap package. You can buy them at a lot of grocery stores now. I think my wife gets them at King Supers. I order them right on Amazon as well. I just get them right off of Amazon. They come in a variety of flavors. It's 100% you know, gluten-free product. All about gluten-free, but it's also really high protein, low sugar. And even there's different flavors and stuff, but even the ones that do have sugar, it's a natural sugar. It comes from the things they put in them. Like one of my favorites is bison meat and cranberries, actually. And so it does have a little bit of sugar in it, but that sugar is natural. It comes from the cranberries. It's not added sugar. So anyway, I'm a real big fan. I think that they're not only very nutritious as far as a healthy snack, but they're also really good. And they don't have to be refrigerated. I'm just a big fan of Epic Bars. I think these guys are great. I don't even know where they're from. Let's see. They're from Texas. Maybe I like them less. No, I'm just joking. But they're based out of Texas, apparently, and I love the Epic Bar.
Texas? I love Texas.
I was joking.
Yeah, and Jacob, you've introduced me to the Epic Bars, and they are good. I will say they are delicious. They are different than anything else I've had, though. And so that's why they are in their own category in my mind. Hence, I think, the name Epic Bars. My pick this week is bowling pins. This one might be interesting to some people, but, you know, I'd always heard about bowling pin shoots, you know, competitions where you're shooting bowling pins. And I've seen some YouTube videos and things. It's like, oh, okay, whatever, you know. Well, the local shooting range here that's just like a minute from my house, last night for their they had a special election night party, basically. They had food, they had drinks, they had cookies. I mean, it was really quite an impressive sight. But along with that, they were hosting their first ever annual, although I think it's going to be more than annual because they're doing another one in 2 weeks. But I know on every election day, I think going forward, they're going to do something pretty cool. Excuse me. But last night was their election night shoot. It was a bowling pin match, and I had never participated before. And so I went and I shot. I did okay. I got second place. Actually, narrowly missed winning the competition. So that was really cool. That was fun. And having never done it before either, you know, I mean, I think at the beginning I was a little bit unsure of, you know, what to expect and things like that. In 2 weeks, though, they're having another bowling pin match, and I plan to be there, and I expect to put up a little more of a fight. But I'm also going to order me some used bowling pins. I'm going to include in the show notes a link as to where you can find and order used bowling pins. And that's what they did. They just ordered a couple boxes of used bowling pins. And it's just fun, you know. I mean, there's the fun of competition. There's the fun of shooting something. And there's the fun of you shoot it, and then you also get feedback. You hear it. It's like, you know, the classic pin, bowling pin, you know, do-do-do-do-do, you know, those things, you know, tumble around and fall to the ground. A lot of fun. So, you know, if you have the opportunity to do something like that, go do it. It's a riot. Up next, Jacob, what you got?
We are working on sending out our welcome kits. So we pre-launched Guardian Nation last month, and everybody who joins Guardian Nation gets a welcome kit. And I'm not going to talk about everything that's in there, but we're getting really close to actually finally getting the first ones shipped out. So we got a lot of Guardian Nation members who are waiting to receive those. If you're listening to this, don't worry. We're going to get those shipped out probably in about a week from now. We're getting really close. We're just putting the final touches on all the cool stuff we're going to throw in those welcome kits. So that's the big thing for me right now.
Yep. Have we ever really officially mentioned welcome kits as being a bonus?
No, it's kind of an unadvertised bonus, but there's actually like legitimate valuable stuff in there that costs us money and you'll like. Mm.
So there you go. You know, Guardian Nation members, or if you haven't joined, you know, join now. You'll get, like Jacob said, hopefully it should be next week. We'll be shipping out welcome kits for our first members, which we got a few of them now. So we got a package together, a number of welcome kits, and we hope that we can throw together some more. So mine up next is that I am also kind of finalizing some stuff for those welcome kits. I was working on some stuff yesterday and today and probably some more tomorrow as we just get, you know, things kind of finalized and put together so we can get those out the door. So exciting times. We're really stoked about Guardian Nation, about the community that we're putting together. I just can see a few years down the road, Jacob, like it's going to be a big, big, big deal. Maybe not even a few years down the road, maybe sooner than we realize, but this is going to be a big deal, our Guardian Nation community. So anyway, that's going to be it for today, folks, for the Concealed Carry podcast. Hope that you enjoyed today's episode. You know, we felt that it, you know, we had to do some justice to the issue by, you know, talking about the election and what happened and what it means going forward for gun rights and so forth. So, you know, there you go. That's it. we're done. We're not going to revisit this specific topic again for some time. We're moving forward. Next week, we plan to have some really great content for you on the podcast. Don't miss our Monday episode where we will feature, of course, as always, our industry news together with justified shooter stories, as well as training tips and so forth. And we're working too, although it has yet to be confirmed, but we're also working on getting a really great guest on the podcast next week as well. So we'll see if that comes together or not. So we will look forward to seeing you on the next episode. Jacob, you want to say goodbye to the folks?
Until Monday, everyone, have a great weekend. If those of you who are celebrating, celebrate hard, mean it, and watch your back, stay vigilant.
Yep. So take care, everybody. We'll see you later.
A reminder that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. USA Firearm Training and the Concealed Carry Podcast strive to share insights and stories about firearm-related incidents and laws, but things could be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information shared in the podcast.